Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And we do get around, don't we, Rabbit?
We do, and unusually, well, not entirely unusually, we're going to preview somewhere where we're going to be in the not-too-distant future, a great party in Cleveland called Five Star Sensation. It's such a great party, it's only held once every 2 years, but we caught up with the organizers and one of the chefs who's honoring the event with his presence, and we're going to bring them to you right here, and we'll see you in Cleveland on June 25th.
Can be difficult for people from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to think that great things come out of Cleveland, Ohio, since there's a major rivalry between two cities on what's called the Turnpike Bowl, which I'm pleased to say the Pittsburgh Steelers have, of course, swept for the last several years. But seriously, folks, there is one thing that happens in Cleveland, and it happens only once every 2 years, and it's the biggest, best party that On the Menu has ever attended. And it's called Five Star Sensation. And today we have joining us Laurie Vick, who is one of the organizers of Five Star Sensation, and two of the people who are going to be making sure it's a great party, Frank Ostini and Gray Hartley from The Hitching Post. And I'm going to steal a little bit of that thunder, saying that those of you who saw the movie Sideways and enjoyed it as we did will know The Hitching Post, and of course it's made them very famous. And one of the things we might ask them is whether that's changed them, but it doesn't, to me, in the conversation we've had with them, sound like it has at all. So first of all, welcome everybody.
Welcome to On the Menu. Let's have Laurie do a little backgrounder for us on this event, which is so special.
Sure, happy to. Well, the Five Star Sensation has been around since 1987, and it's an event that happens biennially and in Cleveland, Ohio, all to benefit the Seidman Cancer Center for cancer research, education, screenings, and survivorship programs. And it is an amazing gastronomic event. Wolfgang Puck is returning again, as he has for all of these years, to be our honorary chef, our honorary chairperson for the event. And Wolfgang gathers together about 35 to 40 of his favorite friends, chefs from all over the country, and Frank Ostini being one of them, and the vintners. I think we have about 40 vintners coming from around the world, and Gray Hartley from The Hitching Post is one of them, and we're going to be speaking with those gentlemen shortly. But it truly is a fabulous event, some great food, great company. People dress, as we like to say, sensationally casual. The event is happening on June 25th at 7 o'clock in the evening at the campus of Cuyahoga Community College, which is on Richmond Road in Highland Heights in Ohio. I'm going to give you in a moment our website and a phone number should anyone require some information. But since its inception, Grant, this event has raised more than $11 million.
Holy Moses, Laurie.
For the Seidman Cancer Center. It truly is. And this year we have an ambitious goal of $1.5 million. And according to our chairperson, Carol Carr, who is one of the original founding members of this event, we are very confident that we're going to reach that $1.5 million, 2,000 in attendance, and we will certainly sell out as we do every year. We're confident of that as well, and ticket sales going very well. It's amazing the support that we get, and we'd love to have our folks from Pittsburgh, and I forgive you, Peter, your reference to football rivalry, but I think something that we all have in common is enjoying great food and great wine.
There's no doubt about that. Now, let me just interject here. For people who have been before, just as we have, it sounds like it's in a new place. It sounds like it's in a new location.
It is a new location, but not far. Before, we had it on the location of our what was then future UH Ahuja Medical Center. But this year, in February, as a matter of fact, we opened the doors to a brand new hospital, the Ahuja Medical Center. So we could no longer use that space because there's a fabulous hospital sitting upon it.
Uh-huh.
So we are across the street at the Tri-C Community College parking lot. And again, it is, as you had mentioned, it is a huge tent, two tents as a matter of fact. So we have about two football fields covered in tenting, and it turns into a magnificent evening, and you don't feel like you're in a tent at all. You feel like it is just some fabulous under the stars, whatever you'd like to say, but it's an absolutely gorgeous event and wonderful. And the great thing, of course, as I mentioned, is that everything goes to benefit cancer research, and that money does stay right in Cleveland for the fabulous Cleveland programs. And, you know, we are so very thankful to all the chefs who volunteer their time and their teams and their resources to this event. And they are just so gracious, and we try to treat them very well when they're in Cleveland in gratitude. And I think that I can't think of a person whose life personally or a life of a loved one or a friend hasn't been touched by cancer. And I think that's one of the reasons that everyone just reaches out and is so happy to be part of this great event.
Now, let's hear from Frank. Frank, it's a long way from where you are in California to Cleveland, Ohio. What made you come the first time?
Well, we were invited by Wolfgang Puck and club I always wanted to be in. We're a country, we live in the country in the central coast of California, so we're about 2.5 hours north of Los Angeles. And in the past we've been sort of unknowns. Of course the movie Sideways changed all that for us. But back when we were first invited, Wolfgang asked us to come to Cleveland, and I thought, why would I go to Cleveland? And the answer was I couldn't say no to the club. I wanted to be in the club, and which is all these great chefs that have either worked for Wolfgang Puck or Chez Panisse in Berkeley, or have been chefs or educated at the Culinary Institute of America. And I had been none of those. Luckily, Wolfgang loved our the Pinot Noir that me and Gray have been making for 30 years now, and he loved our food. He had us come to his event, invited us to Cleveland. Then once we got to Cleveland, boy, did we find out. Was that actually, we were coming there before Cleveland even had a celebrity chef. Michael Simon wasn't famous at the time.
Right.
And we were treated like kings when we came to town because we were like royalty to the, apparently, they're not used to seeing all these celebrity chefs come to town and all these vintners. And we were treated so well that, and then the charity is so compelling that we've been compelled to return every time. It's a great, great event. And Peter, you know, you've attended before, but you've never seen us. We're just one of 30 or 40 chefs, and there's so much talent in one area. It's hard to believe. You can taste the best food in the country within a fence walking distance.
I promise we'll find you this year. Now, let me get this right. I thought, Gray Hartley, that at the Hitching Post Wines, you made Merlot-based wines. Or did I get that wrong?
Peter.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Not
huh?
Wrong. You're just misinformed.
I got you there. You have to admit.
Actually, Merlot was the first wine we ever made.
Yeah, I understand there's a lot of bad Merlot made, but your Pinot must be pretty good because you had some real Pinot enthusiasts who decided it was.
You know, Peter, the joy that we began by making Merlot took us to Cabernet, and then the following year, the third year, we made wine in Frank's garage, Pinot Noir. And upon our first Pinot Noir, it was an experience when we tasted it, when it was finished, getting ready to bottle it, that was life-changing, much like a first kiss.
Oh, my.
Now, we all remember our first kiss. Now, Peter, who was your first kiss?
I don't remember that.
I don't remember mine either.
Oh, Peter,
I remember the first time I kissed my wife, but I don't remember. Some of the others before that, I honestly don't remember.
Always judicious. That's wonderful.
We are always judicious. Tell us what you'll be cooking up if you know already.
Gosh, we have a style of cooking where we cook over a wood fire, and it's the coast live oak that grows in this region of California. It's a style of cooking that the indigenous Chumash Native Americans were cooking over these wood fires before the Spanish came to California. The Spanish brought an ironwork grill that goes up and down over the fire to control the heat on what we're cooking. And we've been doing that in this region for about 200 years. The tradition is cooking beef, but we do pork and lamb and quail and duck and fish and almost anything and vegetables, corn, artichokes, onions. We do everything over this wood fire. So we haven't yet established our menu, but we will be cooking. We bring our own wood from here, this part of California, ahead, and we set up just as if we were cooking at our restaurant or as people do in their backyards here by the thousands. I mean, it's the way to cook in our part of California. It's indigenous to this region. It's called Santa Maria style barbecue. It's not barbecue in the sense of sauce or anything like that. It's really a grilling, a simple grilling over a wood fire. But we use high quality ingredients, and people really seem to like it.
Now, let's before we sign off, let's give our listeners the opportunity to know how to reach Hitching Post and Hitching Post Wines. I'm sure you have websites. Is it just the one site, or do you have more than one?
Well, we have one site for both the restaurant and the winery, and the easiest web address is www.hpwines.com, hpwines.com.
And you actually have two restaurant locations, if I'm reading your website correctly.
Yeah, my family has the original, which is 60 years of my family in the town of Casmelia, California, and mine for 25 years now in the town of Buellton, just 2 hours north of Los Angeles.
Well, nestled in the beautiful Santa Barbara County wine growing.
Well, if you saw the movie, you know just exactly how beautiful it is out there. And we've gotten as close to you as Paso Robles. We'll just have to go a little further the next time we're out there. And, Laurie, let's...
Now, can I reinforce something? There is a spirit of generosity that runs through this event that includes, like, everything that they bring. All the ingredients are top-notch. They work, and the whole thing is they're generously offering you the best of the best in food and wine in this country.
So we thank you publicly, which I'm sure happens, but it doesn't happen with quite as large an audience. Frank and Gray, you're to be congratulated for your support of the event. And Laurie, let's have the website for the five-star sensation again.
Absolutely, it is www.5star.5starsensation.org. And I do thank Frank and Gray, and we look forward to seeing you in Cleveland. And I love the fact that they bring their own wood and their own grill. This grill is fascinating to see. It's all great fun.
Well, I'm going to find this year, for sure.
I'll personally escort you, Anna.
Okay. Okay. And we loved having them. They're fun guys. I can't wait to get to hang with them.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today on The Menu, and we look forward to seeing you June 25th.
Thank you.
And we'll be back after a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Now we're going to move on and tell you about all the wonderful fun we had in New York City when we went there for the Beard Awards. First up, well, actually she's becoming one of my most favorite chefs, is Missy Robbins. And we, this time, interviewed her and ate at her restaurant, Avoce. There are two branches. This one is in Madison Square Park, and it was lovely. And I still relive all those dishes, especially that arugula salad, which I adored. Well, we've been trying for well over a year to get an interview with Missy Robbins. She is chefing at Avoce in two spots, in Columbus Circle, which is where we ate last time, and also near Madison Square Park, which is, I forgot, you know, we've been at this restaurant before, Missy, that I don't remember it being so spacious.
Maybe there were a lot of people in here.
That's probably it.
It looks different when it's full.
Right. How would you describe, like, you really are a fan of Mediterranean and Italian in particular cuisine, right?
Yes. Italian is my love. I'm not Italian, but I'd like to be.
I'll share blood with you since I am.
Thank you.
Is that what kinds of extracurricular? All these chefs do all these extracurricular things. Do you do any extracurricular things that you're
meaning what?
Like, yeah, no, I don't want a leading question. I mean, do you take part in a lot of charity
events? We do a lot of events, particularly in the spring. I have an event a week right now, at least. Not all charity related, but a lot of events, yes.
And, I mean, do you write? Everybody seems to be writing now.
Not writing yet. Thinking about it. Thinking about it, but not yet.
A cookbook or a memoir?
Not a memoir.
Thank you.
I'm not sure that anyone would be that interested in my story. Maybe a combination, though. I mean, I think there's some fun stories with some fun recipes. I want something people can use. I have a couple of ideas.
It's called Food Lit now, you know. We have a whole new category.
It's great.
You are from Connecticut.
Originally.
Originally. And then you trained in D.C.?
Yep. I went to Georgetown University, and my last semester there sort of said, I don't think I want to sit in an office, and I don't want to wear a suit to work, and I don't want to get dressed up. And I had always had this love of food and restaurants, and more than any food and restaurants. I cooked at home a lot, and family was very food-oriented, and we traveled a lot when I was younger, and restaurants in New York were a big part of my growing up. We would come for birthdays and celebrations, and I lived about an hour and a half outside of the city. And I said, when I started cooking, which was 18 years ago, it wasn't...
Oh, it seems so young to be doing that 18 years ago.
I was 22. So when I started cooking, it wasn't like it is now. You didn't go to college and become a chef. It's not what the norm was. And I had to go to my parents and say, I'm going to make $7 an hour and I'm going to become a cook. And after they just sent me to one of the most prestigious universities in the country.
Just out of curiosity, what were you studying at Georgetown?
Art history.
I got you there. All of us are art historians to start
along with Ruth Reichel and whoever knows that.
No. Art history, a little psychology. But Georgetown's very, very, very liberal arts oriented. So you take a lot of core classes there. Theology, English, philosophy, everything under the sun that they cover. So I said, I'm going to give this a shot. And I went to this restaurant and I said, can I learn how to cook? I'll do anything. I'll work for free. I'll do anything you want. They said, sure, you can work Friday and Saturday nights. Be here at 4 o'clock. And I was like, Friday and Saturday nights, that's not fun. I was like, I that's like prime partying hours. But I did it and I loved it. And I ended up staying for a year there. I left for the summer and I went and traveled in Europe. And I came back and worked there for another year.
Now, this is a restaurant that's still there, I believe, in Georgetown, right?
Yeah, it's been there for 1789. It was above my college bar, so it was very convenient because once I started working there, I then had access through the back door. I didn't have to wait in line anymore.
Missy, what is the major difference, if there is any, between this restaurant and your uptown?
It's really big uptown. style.
It is really big.
Yes, it's much bigger. We have private dining there, which we don't have here. And the menus are very similar in style, but the menus are actually almost about 95% different in both restaurants.
Really? Give me an example of that.
Like, we might have a chicken dish in both restaurants, but the accompaniments are different. All the pasta dishes are different. There's maybe 5 dishes that overlap between desserts and the regular menu. We didn't want, particularly the owner, Marlon Abella, he didn't want carbon copies of the restaurants.
Well,
so
that's a lot of work for you doing
it
2
is.
Separate
Makes it
menus.
More fun, though. He didn't want carbon copies. He wanted you to know you were at an Avoce, and he wanted a style. So if you go to the Avoce uptown, we have the same exact chairs. They're white. We have the same tables, but they're brown leather instead of green leather. So there's a very strong style. The literature is all the same. The paraphernalia is all the same, but the menu content's different, and the vibes of the restaurant, just because of size more than anything, and there's a view there, and there's no patio there, and there's a patio here. It attracts people to both restaurants, which is great, and the neighborhoods are very different. The menus for also, I have 2 chef de cuisines. Obviously, I can't be in 2 places at once, so I have someone in each restaurant who oversees the day-to-day operations, and they're very, very much a part of the creative process with me, and it gives them an opportunity to grow themselves and to be involved. And if I had 2 exactly the same menus, it's just people becoming robots, and I don't want that, and I don't think Marlon wants that. So it makes it more interesting.
So I mean, if I'm thinking to myself, I want to have dinner at Avoce, how do I figure out which one to go to?
Depends on your mood, location. The food, you'll know you're eating my food. And even though the chef de cuisines participate quite a bit, they have to participate so that the food ends up seeming like my food. So both of them come from different backgrounds, and they're both much younger than I am, and they like to kind of push buttons and see how far they can take me, and I'm a little bit more conservative than both of them, and I think at the end of the day, we sort of meet in the middle, and the food has become more interesting at both restaurants because of all 3 of us and not just because of me or because of them. But in terms of picking where you want, you can't really lose at either one. It's just a matter of what neighborhood you're interested in going to, and in the summer, if you want to sit outdoors, or in the spring, if you want to sit outdoors. Not today, but
what a nice setup you have, by the way.
It's fantastic.
It
changes
like
the whole
furniture.
Scope. Yeah, it changes the scope of the restaurant. It's really fantastic here in the spring.
It's not
vibe.
Just sticking a table on the sidewalk.
No,
You've
no,
got
no.
A whole outdoor dining area.
Yeah, it's a second restaurant.
Yeah, it is.
It almost doubles the size of the restaurant, not quite, but we have about 75 seats out there.
Well, now, we're going to be talking about, because we're going to be having lunch here at this restaurant, and I picked up one menu that you said it was, because it has Lazio to start with, which was a hint that you do regional Italian, and you have a whole program of regional Italian. Tell us about that.
We do. We've been doing these regional lunch menus. It's a $29 prefix menu, and we have them both at both restaurants, and we change the region every 3 weeks. So we pick a region, and we're now on our second or third round of the regions, and we really try not to repeat dishes. So we research really deep into the regions, and again, my chef de cuisines participate in this, and the way it sort of works is they do a lot of research, I do a lot of research, they come back to me with ideas, and then we sort of look at the ideas and create them together, and they do tastings for me, and I sort of tweak the dishes. But if you think of Lazio, you think of Rome, for instance, and you think of very traditional pasta dishes, which you don't see very many of on this menu.
No, you don't. I'm looking at really exciting things.
We find really interesting parts of the region and really try and sort of highlight those and give people an experience that they don't necessarily expect from a particular region without sort of veering away too much.
Here's the one, roasted rabbit leg with rabbit sausage, long beans, and cumin. Cumin's Italian?
You find odd spices in all over Italy. Yeah. It's not Italian, but because there was so much spice trade throughout Italy, that in different regions you find different spices. I mean, if you go to the Veneto, you find curry and you find all these things that you don't necessarily associate with Italy. But that's the beauty of Italian regional cooking, is that people in America sort of think of Italian as red sauce and southern Italian food. And there's a whole world out there of Italian food that has nothing to do with that, that we also try and sort of educate people about Italy and what the country is really about. I lived in Italy 10 years ago for 6 months, and I traveled to different regions and cooked.
Where'd you
and
live?
I was in Emilia-Romagna, Tuscany, and the last place I was Friuli, and I worked in a restaurant.
Isn't that fun, Friuli?
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. I knew nothing about it. I mean, absolutely nothing, and someone sent me there to a restaurant, a Michelin one-star restaurant.
What restaurant was it?
It was called Ai Amici. It was run by, it's in a very, very small town, and it's run by a family, a father and a husband and wife and their two kids, and the mother and the son are in the kitchen together, and the father and the daughter are in the dining room. Quite a dynamic. And now, I mean, it's 10 years later, when I was there, the son was sort of just getting into the kitchen. He had run the dining room and decided he wanted to cook with his mom. And his mom really was fairly traditional, and she made all the pasta every day. And if you look at their menus now, they've become quite progressive, actually. I think he's using a lot of sort of modern technique. And I haven't talked to them in 10 years, but I think that they're doing some really interesting things there. And
well, you have really creative, interesting twists on things in your menu.
We do.
Which is this? Is this the
That's the lunch menu. This is the dinner menu. The lunch menu and the dinner menu are fairly similar. There's some things on the dinner menu, and we do specials at night, and we don't do specials during the day, so probably get more information if you look at this one.
Pick a dish and just walk us through it.
One of my favorites right now is the linguine. It's with lobster, and we take San Marzano tomatoes. It's sort of a staple of both restaurants, and we cure them with salt and sugar, and then we marinate them in olive oil and orange zest and thyme and oregano and garlic overnight, and they just kind of pick up sort of extra flavor that becomes the base of the sauce. And it's finished with something called nduja, which is a spreadable salumi, basically, from Calabria, and it's spicy and
it's become really
quirky
popular.
And that kind of finishes the sauce. It emulsifies it, and it gives it some heat and a little combo of seafood and pork. There's lobster stock in the dish, and marjoram and breadcrumbs and garlic. It's really, really, really flavorful.
Oh, what's
definitely one of my favorites right now.
I can't even imagine what to order for lunch because everything looks just so gorgeous. I mean, too bad I just couldn't start at the beginning and eat my way all the way through.
You can. How much time do you have?
What do you do about wine? Do you have a big wine program?
We have a huge wine program that's run by Olivier Floss. He's the wine director for the entire company in the U.S. So he's in charge of both of Voce's, and we have a restaurant in Boston called Bistro du Midi, and we have a restaurant in Connecticut called Morello, and Olivier oversees all the wine lists for those.
Special wine events. I saw them posted on the front.
Yeah.
And your
I leave that to Olivier,
Your focus is mostly on Italian wines?
We do Italian, French, American, everything.
So, anyhow, is there anything else that somebody should know about coming here? You obviously are very into the flavors.
I mean, we change the menu a lot, so...
But you like your flavors. You like flavor.
Clean, though. I like clean flavor. The food's very simple. The food is about taking ingredients and letting them shine and not overly manipulating them and really letting them speak for themselves without really changing the essence of them.
Now,
I've got a funny one here. We have to find out about a dish called ipoglosso.
It's halibut in Italian.
Oh, it is. Okay, I didn't realize that.
With lentils, walnut vinaigrette, and ramps because it's spring.
That's an awesome dish. That's a new one. We poach the halibut in olive oil over lentils that are cooked in veal stock and chicken stock, so it's fairly hearty, but then it's lightened with this walnut vinaigrette. It's a fish dish, but it's something that definitely can go with red wine, so it's sort of fish dish for someone who wants something a little heartier. And there are ramps in the vinaigrette as well, and then grilled ramps on top. Another one of my favorites right now.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you to put on your sorceress hat here. Are we still in the pork piggy era?
I'm not one of those people. I'm not in the pork. I've never been in the pork era.
Okay. Well,
I mean, I like
you
pork.
You have a lot of rabbit.
We do everything. We don't want to get bored.
I mean, what about from your customers? What are they looking for? People are getting so
jaded.
People
want variety, and they want quality more than anything. And I think that's why we change the menu every 3 weeks. That's why we try and keep up with seasons. That's why we try. You know, everyone always says, oh, how often do you change your menu? We change it when we're bored of a dish. And there's certain things that we keep on all the time. The funghi al forno has been on. It's probably the first dish I put on. The casancini is always here. But everything else is sort of fair game. The chicken's been on for quite a while. We always have some sort of chicken. The trout's been on for quite a while. But I think I'm getting ready to change it maybe, which made my chef de cuisine quite happy when I circled it on the changes last night. But we really try and just keep it new and interesting and let people be excited about coming back. This is not... We don't want Avoce to be a special occasion restaurant. We want people to come here for special occasions, but we want regulars, and we have a big base of regulars. So
I would say I've tasted your food, so I know how good it is.
Thank you.
But, I mean, anybody just looking at the size of these two restaurants, the fact that you fill them regularly twice a day forever and ever, it's just amazing. So it has to be good.
We try.
Well, Missy Robbins, thank you for talking to us, and I'm looking forward to sampling some dishes.
Great. Enjoy lunch.
Thank you.
And don't go away, because we'll be back after a very short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Here we are again, and we're going to another fine restaurant in New York City, a new discovery for us. Perhaps not surprisingly, because the restaurant's only been open for 2 months. It's called Tenpenny. It's in a redevelopment called the Gotham Hotel.
We're going to stay there next time. It looks so smart.
It hasn't been there very long either.
Smart hotel.
Smart hotel, smart restaurant, two really nice young men living their dream.
We're at Tenpenny in New York, and I've already learned something. We've only been here probably 10 minutes, and that is that the chef's name is, I mean, I knew what his name was, but I didn't know that it was Big Onion as opposed to a Little Onion, because it's Christopher Cipollone as opposed to Cipollini, which is the Little Onion.
Yes.
I'm really, really grateful to you.
It's a little piece of history, right?
Now, maybe I should ask you, why is it called Tenpenny?
Tenpenny refers to the carpenter's nails. So
That's right.
Yeah, because the owners of this hotel are primarily builders. They're construction guys.
And the hotel is?
The Gotham Hotel. So we decided to reference that. And the rivets in the bar, if you see over there, they're Tenpenny nails. And, you know, just taking... We didn't want to, like... do any definition but what it is. Like, Tenpenny is who we are, part of the building of this hotel, and, you know, and how we constructed it. I mean, they actually built these tables that we're sitting at, and these, all the fixtures, the mirrors, everything's built by the people who own this hotel, so.
Now, how old is the hotel?
Hotel's only like 8
And you are only like 2 months here, right?
Yeah, 2 months.
Who? I didn't realize this was also new and happening.
Yeah.
Chris, let's talk a little bit about your background, because I find it really interesting. You have one foot in your Italian roots and one foot in your French training, and you're cooking modern American. First of all, how did you get to where you are now? A little bit, you know.
Well, I grew up in Westchester.
Okay, so you're in New Yorker anyhow.
Yeah. So I have an Italian background as my heritage. I worked in a lot of French kitchens.
You were in France, weren't you?
No, I was in Italy. That was after culinary school.
Oh, but, okay.
Before that and after that.
Oh, you got the French through culinary.
I worked in a lot of French restaurants. At the time when I was coming up through the ranks, and this is when I was cooking in Westchester, you'd work at a lot of these, what they call progressive American or modern American restaurants that would use a lot of French techniques, like the days of the beurre blanc and stuff like that. That was still being widely used back in the late 90s or early 2000. And when I went to culinary school, obviously that's a very French-based school. And after that, I won a scholarship to go out to Italy for a while. So I kind of went back to that, and I saw a lot of like really great techniques and stuff out there, and came back and I started cooking on my own. I took a couple of sous chef jobs here and there and worked for some really good chefs, and then I got early on in my career I got the opportunity to run my own kitchens, and it's kind of a blend of French cooking techniques, Italian cooking techniques, and using what's around in the Hudson Valley. That was very big, and now being in New York, you can get anything you want. That's basically what we do here. Modern Americans, so that kind of lets us use whatever ingredients we want to use.
Yeah, you do.
And, with the nods to Italian and French, because you'll see me make pasta, and you'll see me use French techniques, but I'm also up on the times, and I'll use any kind of modern techniques to achieve what we're trying to do.
So, but here you are now presented with this wonderful restaurant opportunity, and also your partner appeared on the scene, who we're going to talk to later, who runs the wine program.
Yes.
But you had a vision. Now, what was this vision of this restaurant? You could design anything you wanted to design, and you wanted to have this kind of Italian take on great food, beautifully, passionately appreciated.
Yeah, we just took all the elements of what we loved about coming up in this game. We were both from fine dining backgrounds. We both love kind of casual atmospheres. So we took the elements of each that we liked, and we put it together for this. I like taking care of the food, really beautiful presentation, really concentrating on the flavors, representing the ingredient, that kind of thing. And then we'll serve it to you, playing a little rock and roll, and we'll put down a great plate of pasta or the spring vegetables or something like that, and you'll be like, wow, this is actually well thought out and well taken care of, and I feel relaxed. And you don't have to go through a 4-hour meal and wear a suit and that kind of thing, but you're getting that quality. I think that's what's missing, especially in the Midtown area, because we both live quite close to here. So we just kind of created a restaurant that we would want to go to.
And how well has it been received?
Oh, it's
2 months in. That's
it's been very well received. People, knock on wood, people have been really nice to us. They really appreciate what we're doing. It's a bit of a risk in this area because Midtown is hit
it's
or miss.
It's tough.
It's really tough.
I mean, I don't know how you deal with the kind of competition you face.
You know what? But that's it. There is no, unless you're going to go to a place like La Bernardin or the Danielle or something like that, wildly expensive, and you got to sit there and you can dress up and all that. Other than that, there's really nothing, not too much else. There's not as far as, not that's like us. So that's the niche we're trying to hit. And I have, even in my neighborhood, I've already kind of seen a revolution of that. People putting in, instead of putting in the frat boy bars, they're putting in a nice wine bar, things like that, which is, it's good to see.
Now, can you, now, after telling us that, pick out, just listeners really want to kind of know specifics about dishes so they could picture the kind of experience they're going to get.
Sure.
Are there some that you would like to pick out as really representative of your style and the style of the restaurant?
Well, break the menu down into snacks, appetizer, entree, and like some shared plates and stuff like that. And we also offer a tasting menu. Tasting menu is for the people who want to come in and really have the whole experience. But we also offer being able to sit at the bar, have your meat and cheese kind of thing, and our little snacks and fun stuff that we do.
What's a fun thing?
Like, here, the 10 penny chips. these aren't just...
Yeah, I've read that.
They're,
I mean,
they're not just
beet
normal.
Chips?
Yeah, we make everything out of whatever the ingredient is. So the beet chips are actually a puree of beets that we've blended with a tapioca starch. We steam that dough, and then we dehydrate it. And right before service every day, we have a really hot deep fryer, and we throw those dehydrated chips in the fryer, and they puff up like a pork rind. But it's made completely out of beet. It gets dusted with a little gorgonzola powder and beet powder on top of that, and that's the kind of the fun stuff we're doing. So that's where we were taking, you know, modern. Those are local beets from upstate, and we turned them into, you know, something fun and modern and cool. And another thing that's been well received in the appetizer selection is our spring vegetables. So I'm taking whatever is on the market, whatever's at the green market. You know, it was the morel fiddlehead fern ramp thing for a while, and now it's, you know, evolving.
Oh, you out of morels? I haven't had a morel yet.
They're coming and going, and the price is ridiculous this year. So
really?
Yeah, you kind of find it might be a little limited.
All the rain, you think you'd have a lot.
You would think that, but when they're $125 three pounds, it's like...
You better start foraging.
Yeah, exactly. No, but what we do here is it's a fun take. So I take all these different vegetables. I like to serve some raw, some cooked, some pickled, some crispy. When I say crispy, I mean dehydrated, to just really enhance the flavor and texture. And we dust them with a ranch powder that we make. We take a special blend of powders like yogurt powder and buttermilk powder that I get from a specialty spice company. And we recreate that ranch dressing flavors, and we dust the vegetables. That's the thing. It's a perception thing. You're getting all this fresh, beautiful vegetables presented in different textures, and it's reminding you that it's still fun. We're still kind of taking a stab at it and making people laugh while they're having this elegant dish. So those are the type of things that we're doing in that kind of section. Entrees, I mean, if I was going to go between it, I'd probably have to say the heritage pork. So it's a special breed of pork that we get from New Mexico from this crazy lady out there. She does everything from raised bees, and she's like a jack of all trades. And she has this pork that we've never seen anything like it. It's well marbled like Wagyu beef. It looks like snow white. It actually melts when you're like butchering it.
In Four Story Farms?
Yes.
Yeah, wow.
I'll put it down any day. Really, it's amazing. We lightly brine it just to season it, and then we griddle it on our plancha down there, and we serve it with a little savory apple pie. So you have this pork rack. It's all juicy and tender, and we make these little apple pies, and it being savory is we roast the apples with white wine and thyme and caramelized onion, and that's the filling. And you know, there's sea salt on the crust with thyme leaves and that kind of thing, and serve it fresh dandelion greens and
I love
sauce.
Dandelion greens. Yeah, we've had this huge Twitter exchange all over the country about spring is dandelion greens. Everybody says it's asparagus. For me and all these other people, it's dandelions.
Yeah, we actually use the red dandelions.
Oh, that's good.
We find they're a little less bitter, and we cook them down with just a little lemon and garlic. When that comes to your table, we pour a bourbon sauce made from the bones of the pork and some bourbon and
brown
sugar.
This is really sounding exciting. We also have Jeff Tascarella here, a partner in this operation, who does the wine program. How does the wine program fit into this?
You know, it's always evolving. When you first open a restaurant, start with X amount of dollars and big dreams.
And wine's a huge investment.
Wine is a huge investment. Yeah. So what I did when I started out with the wine program was I kind of went to a lot of my old standbys that I've loved over the years, and a lot of my focus has been with Italian wines.
Like what?
Well, I was the wine director at Scarpezza with Scott Conant. I was the wine director at Enoteca for a short time downtown. I worked at Fiamma Osteria, Michael White's first restaurant in the city. So that's where a lot of my love of wine comes from. So, yeah, we eventually plan to grow it out. It's primarily Italian now, and it's going to encompass the whole globe. If I like it, it'll get on the list. Chris's food is fun to pair wine with because there's always a lot of wild card elements in there, so you get to be creative with it.
What are some of what you would call your Italian stars, Jeff?
Well, we could talk about that two separate ways. You know, like I'm a big fan of the esoteric kind of selections. I think that brings people that love wine back because there's things that they can have here that they can't have everywhere.
Like what?
Some of my favorite producers right now. I love Zime out of the Veneto. Celestino Gasparini is the winemaker there. He used to work at Quintarelli, and he does a lot of crazy wines. One of our more popular wines, it's a Rondinella Bianco. So that's normally a red grape, and the grape had mutated to a white grape on his property. Yeah, and he pulled it. He noticed it. He had it tested at the university, and he cultivated the grape. And it's a really fun, borderline, oxidated, kind of Grosvenor-esque wine.
Yeah, well, Grovner is one of our favorite people. He's a character
beyond belief. The prices are getting crazy.
Oh, they're terrible. You can't, even if you paid the price, you can't get them. He won't sell you any if he doesn't like you.
Yeah. Which is fun.
We were actually at his vineyard.
Beautiful, right?
Yeah. Well, he's very peculiar.
Spectacular. But yeah, so I try to seek out, okay, you like Grovner. You know, we have a number of wines on our list for $50 instead of $250.
See, you got Grovner. You must really have a lot of inns. That sounds exciting, too, this pairing thing. Let's do a few logistics just to make sure that we don't miss out on that. Mm. Your location exactly.
It's 16 East 46th Street between 5th and Madison.
Which is easy to get to if you're visiting New York.
Right by Grand Central, right by Times Square. We're centrally located.
Your website is?
www.tenpennynyc.com.
Okay, so don't forget, listeners, you have to put the NYC in the end of that. And reservations, hard to get or not hard to get?
Getting hard to get.
Hopefully hard to get.
Okay, did you want to say anything more about, you haven't hit on desserts or anything. Do you have a pastry chef?
I do, actually. Our pastry chef is Jerry Minos, who worked for Scott. He's a little hidden gem in the city. He worked for Scott Conan for 8 years. And he's here now, and he's branching out a little bit. And he's getting to use the ingredients that don't have to be strictly, you know, Italian-based and different kind of pastries that he makes. You know, it's getting interesting. He's starting to pick up on the quirkiness of the rest of the menu by having, like, incorporating some savory ingredients and stuff like that. So it's fun. We're doing things like a chamomile panna cotta with olive oil cake.
Funny.
Yeah, and a yogurt.
That might put you to sleep, the chamomile. That's tranquilized.
Yeah, it's the end of the meal, so.
Well, is there anything we've missed? I'm looking so forward to this because of all the quirky things and the quality. I mean, I know you're aiming to really make a mark in the and really tough restaurant market.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can hardly wait.
Good.
You're going to serve us good food?
Awesome.
Anything you want to say, Jeff?
We're excited to serve you. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And now another short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
We're back again.
Yes, and we're going to take you into what might be the most chaotic scene of the James Beard Foundation Awards, and that's the press room, where we caught all the, not all, but we got as many as we could of the winners as they were coming out of their photo session, off the stage or to their photo session, and then into the press room.
And six very happy people. First up, Michael Tusk of Quince Restaurant in San Francisco, one of our absolute favorites and just an absolutely lovely man. Isaac Becker, who we hadn't met before, whose restaurant 112 Eatery won for best restaurant. Is it Great Lakes or Midwest? I'm not sure which. It's in Minneapolis anyway. Then Miss Rusling from the Lantern Restaurant in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, who was on the program just a short time ago. Joshua, I've forgotten his last name. This case from just Adlin. Joshua Adlin, who won for Best Restaurant Design Award for Bar Agricole in San Francisco. A representative of the family which owns Chef Voles, an American Classics winner from Atlantic City, New Jersey.
And they were having a ball. Yeah.
And finally, the spokesperson and owner for Rip Van Winkle Bourbon from the Pappy Van Winkle Distillery in Louisville, Kentucky.
Which I adore.
And again, if you ever have a nervous disposition, if you don't like noise, join us again next week.
Because
the rest of the program is filled with background noise, and our voices and our guest voices heard as best they can be.
Go. Okay. This is probably one of my really most happiest moments at the Beard Award, because we followed this chef restaurateur for, is it 5 years, Michael Tusk, or six?
Yeah, I think it's five.
Okay. I mean, met him the first time he was nominated, and he didn't make it, and he's brave enough to face it every year. And this year, we said this is going to be it, and by darn, it is.
Oh, and,
aren't you happy?
No, it's very, it's great for the restaurant. It's great for the people that have been working for me for a number of years, my wife, a lot of other...
your wife is a huge help.
No, I couldn't have done it without her, so
yeah.
It's very special to have her here with me tonight.
But, you know, you were talking to somebody else. You've been interviewed. You've been battered around since you walked up the stage with your medal. And you were saying that in previous years, it really wasn't all that bad losing because the people who won were so great. But this year, you actually felt that you deserved it. Now, that's a really brave thing to say.
Didn't say I deserved it. I just said that I thought I had a pretty good chance compared to the other years. And I knew last year that, like, going against a great chef like David from Manresa, it was like I would have voted for him for myself. He's a great guy. He's a great chef. I love his restaurant. So I never take any that much of this that seriously. But it's kind of nice for the folks that work for me. And
but you already knew that you were right at the top of this game and you deserved it.
Well, I said that I thought that I had a better chance because of where I was seated in the auditorium compared to past years. Being a superstitious chef, I thought that maybe it meant something that I was on the aisle, so, you know.
We love you. We love your restaurants. And if you say it was primarily for Quint?
Yeah, definitely. It's nice to have the second restaurant, Catonia, open.
Catonia.
Most of the time, you know.
Which we also love, yeah.
Thanks.
And so what are you going to do? You're going to party a little bit after this award.
You know, I'm just going to do what I normally do. I would have done the same thing with my wife and Katrina, the manager, that I did in prior years. It's just a little bit funner this year, I'd have to say. But you roll the dice. Sometimes you win. It was nice to get up on stage and be. I was grateful for anybody that likes the restaurant or has dined at the restaurant, and such as yourselves, and that backs us all for a number of years. So for me, it was very just important to thank everybody.
Well, you've got so many fans. Your restaurants are so good. I mean, we love you so much. We really, congratulations.
Well, you're some of
my
favorite.
Who do you have to tell the win about? What, the family, or who do you tell?
I gave Katrina my cell phone, so I'm sure I didn't want to be, she had a pocketbook, so I gave her my wallet and my phone. So if I lose my wife and my general manager, then I have no wallet identification or anything. I'll be out on the mean streets of New York trying to fend my way back to the hotel. Luckily, I have the key to the hotel.
Call us.
I will.
Oh, love you, Michael. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, something else is interesting. I'm going to make a projection. There are two more awards on the Quince horizon pretty soon. One's called Best Wine Service.
Oh, yeah.
But you need a few more years of David Lynch and gang to do that, but you'll get there. And the other is the overall service award.
I appreciate it. No, I think I'm really proud of the service and the wine service. Both of them, David Lynch, he's a great addition to the team, and he's been doing a great job. And Katrina and Lindsay.
Katrina's just so incredible.
Do a fabulous job with the service, so I'm really proud of that. As you know, just a nice, hopefully your prediction is right, but as I said earlier, I'm just happy to be here.
Well, we'll talk to you in future years about those two things when they happen.
I appreciate it.
Okay, now, we can't even hear who the winners are, so I have somebody with a great medallion around his neck and the yellow silk cord, and he's from Minneapolis?
That's right, Minneapolis.
And you are Chef?
Isaac Becker from the 112 Eatery in Bar La Grassa.
And your restaurant's called what?
Well, I have two restaurants. One is the 112 Eatery. And the other one is Bar La Grassa.
And tell me this. Bar La Grassa sounds Italian. What kind of food do you do?
Bar La Grassa is Italian, and the 112 Eatery is kind of an all-American bistro.
Hello. Are you not excited?
I'm super excited. I'm very happy.
Well, are you surprised?
Yes, I am. I almost fell over when they called my name out.
Had you been nominated before?
This would have been my fourth year being nominated, but I won.
Oh,
so
no.
Yeah, you're back to ground zero, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You said something funny. You said next to the birth of your children.
Yeah, this is third. I have two boys, and this is the third happiest day of my life.
Oh, God.
And what will they say when you tell them?
They'll be pretty happy. My youngest son will want to wear the medallion.
Oh, good. He could break his head open with this.
That's right.
Do you think he'll know what it means?
Oh, yeah. It's been, our household's been consumed by this thing for a few years now.
Oh, really?
We lived before or after the James Beard event, basically, and now it's finally over.
Okay. So you sort of got a scent of it and then you wanted to win it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now the monkey's off your back.
It's over. I can retire. I'm out. I'm
now,
out.
Are you native to Minneapolis?
Yes, I am.
Well, first of all, it's probably one of the nicest cities in the whole entire United States, right?
Yeah, we love it. My wife and I, we love it. We have great business. Everything. It's really been a great town to live in for us.
Well, I can't express. I'm so thrilled for you because you're so happy.
I am happy.
And you have to have done a really good job to get anybody to pay attention to what you're doing in Minneapolis.
Well, thanks.
And is this wonderful lady looking down?
My beautiful wife, lovely and talented.
Give it a microphone. Give it a microphone.
Say hello.
Hi.
So
she is gorgeous.
So what does it mean to the Becker family, this thing?
Well, to my 7-year-old, it means he gets a medallion he's going to wear, right?
But I was saying this has been a big sort of family thing, right?
Yeah. It's been really exciting. It's a really fun day for us.
Okay. So the dream is realized.
I believe our tiny restaurant even got noticed.
Well, we're going to come and see you in Minneapolis as soon as we can get around to it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Okay, Andrea Russi, just on our show, and here you are at the Beers, and you won an award.
I won an award, Best Chef of the Southeast.
Now, that's pretty major.
There's many regions, and I was nominated in a category that had a lot of amazing, talented, smart chefs. Every single one of them is a friend, and they're all incredibly generous people, and so I feel very lucky to have been in their company.
Do you think it got a little boost from your book?
I hope it boosts the book.
Yeah.
It's got to boost the book.
I was asking in reverse. The book boosted the award.
Oh, I don't know, because I don't know about the award process. But for the book to boost the award, wouldn't that be not fair play?
I don't know why.
I think the book was great.
It's called You Do Anything You Can to Win, I think.
Okay.
I mean, I love the book. I haven't eaten there yet, but I will. And I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's great to see you guys.
A woman chef proprietor is like to be celebrated beyond belief.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations, you. Now go run.
I'm going to go run with the champagne. And my next drink might be tequila, so I might.
Where are you going?
Upstairs to get some tequila. There's some very delicious tequila there.
Okay. I forgot we have this other thing to do all together. All right.
It's great to see you both. Thanks so much.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
There's a very special James Beard Award for the professionals in the business who are always over budget and always late. The designers of these wonderful places that we eat. Now, you can, of course, now contradict me. Winner of the Restaurant Design Award at 2011 Beard Awards, and you have his card.
Yeah, I mean, this is Joshua Adlin we're talking to, and it's Adlin Darling Design, and you did one really spectacular restaurant that I heard of, although I've never been to it, and that was the one up for the award?
Yes.
And it was in San Francisco?
Correct.
And tell us more about what made it special.
The name of the restaurant.
The restaurant is Bar Agricole.
It was raved over all the design magazines.
That it was, yes. The restaurant was conceived of by the owner, Thad Vogler, who was looking for a restaurant that expressed complete honesty and integrity of food and material, both physical material in the restaurant. And so he made it very clear that I'm doing one restaurant. That's it. So this one's got to last a long time. It's got to have an incredible sense of permanence and integrity. And so the kind of grew out of a material palette of concrete, wood and steel, and translucent glass. And we explored different expressions of concrete, whether it was board form concrete or ductile concrete, which is one of the few examples of high strength ductile concrete where you can pour concrete as thin as 1 inch and create beautifully sensual forms. And
really?
We created banquettes out of ductile concrete and then complemented that with a great deal of reclaimed wood. So the walls and the ceilings create a hull, which is strips of old whiskey barrel oak, and all the tabletops, the bar tops, the chairs are either old barns reclaimed or
old wine staves that have been reclaimed. So there's a rusticity and a textural quality that it feels as if it's been there for hundreds of years. It also opens out to a garden, exterior dining court, where they also forage and grow in planters the herbs for the cocktails in the evening.
But do you specialize it? I mean, it is a specialty. Is it restaurant design?
Actually, we design everything from furniture to homes to restaurants to wineries to cultural centers. We have a very wide and diverse practice, from the very tiny to the very large, and from the urban to the rural. So it's not about where it is, what it is, or what size it is. It's about the integrity of the project and what people are asking for.
Now, you are a native Californian?
Not at all. I'm a Midwestern that has moved there, and I've lived there for some 20 years. But I'm originally,
and where did you study and train?
Both my partner, David Darling, and I studied at Cincinnati, University of Cincinnati.
Oh, you're from Cincinnati.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Now, here's a tough question for you. You've seen a lot of restaurants.
Yes.
And you love the one you designed in San Francisco that you won this award for, the best. But
right.
What's the second best one you've ever seen from a design standpoint?
You know, it's interesting. When restaurateurs come to us and ask for something like, and they're not wanting to copy, but they're wanting the soul of a restaurant. They use an example, which is Zuni Restaurant in San Francisco.
Zuni!
Okay.
Right.
And it's a timeless piece.
It's a timeless venue. It's a timeless restaurant.
And one of the things that they captured, I think, quite elegantly, is the understanding that going out to dinner is a very social, very voyeuristic experience, as well as celebration of food. And I think, given how it's cited, how it's crafted, it encourages that social dynamism.
Well, I'll tell you this, Joshua. If I totally lost my mind and wanted to open a restaurant, I think I sure would ask you to design it for me.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Congratulations on the recognition.
Thank you very much.
You look great with those yellow ribbons and the medals around your neck.
Well, thank you. Hopefully we'll be back again someday for another project. But it's been a treat. It's a real honor.
Yeah, keep going.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for taking the time after. I mean, you're in such a hubbub here. Everybody's grabbing pieces of you. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you. It's a treat.
Well, we're in very excited circumstances at the Beard Awards. But we have somebody who's really excited because she just won the American Classic Restaurant, and it's been a surprise. Luis Esposito, what did you think about this whole thing? You've been doing this at your restaurant called Chef Olas. I'll ask you later why it's called that. For 29 years, did you say?
29 years, yes. We bought the restaurant in 1982.
And you did, what kind of food do you serve?
We have Italian food with an American little flair to it. Kind of wanted something very special. So I used my grandmom's recipes and my husband's grandmom's recipes and my recipes and my husband's recipes, and he's a chef, and I'm in the front of the house, he's in the back of the house. And what we did is we made up all these wonderful recipes. My two boys are with us, Michael and Lewis, and my husband's Michael also. And we worked together for 29 years. And all of a sudden we hear James Beard Award. I cannot tell you how I screamed. I kept screaming. I couldn't stop screaming for like 10 minutes. I was so excited. It's like a dream come true, because you want to do something special and you want to do it well. And you try so hard to make it different and special, and you never just dream it's going to happen to you. I am so very excited. And my husband, Michael, my son, Louis, we're all very excited.
Now, everybody came. Who's running the restaurant? Is the restaurant closed?
It's closed every Monday.
Oh, okay.
So it worked out perfect.
So
closed every Monday.
So you're going back to open tomorrow?
Yes. We're leaving tomorrow morning.
Isn't that funny?
But it's right in Atlantic City, and it's called Chef Bolas's Restaurant.
Yes.
And you want, is it regional Italian?
Yes, we're a little American. We put a little American in there
Italian
also, like a rack of lamb and a New York strip steak, but it's mostly Italian.
Well, you were totally delightful, and
thank
I'm
you.
So glad you won.
Thank you. We're happy, too. We're blessed. Thank you.
Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you. You're very sweet. Thank
Bye.
You.
Well, just got the James Beard Award for Spirits Beverage Professional.
And you beat some pretty tough people, too, right?
Yes, it is.
That must make you really
people.
Proud, huh?
It is, indeed. It's quite an honor.
Now, what's the secret to Pepe Van Winkle?
Well, our bourbon's a little older than most bourbons out there on the market, and we use wheat in our recipe instead of rye, so that's mm-hmm. a little different. Grandfather, who was Pappy, introduced that formula to the world back in before Prohibition, and it seems to still be working.
Now, there was a rumor that there's a relationship between Pappy Van Winkle and Old Fitzgerald.
Yes, my family owned that brand for years. And Pappy bought the brand back before Prohibition, and that was the name of his distillery, the Old Fitzgerald Distillery.
And are you still making Old Fitzgerald?
No, we sold our original distillery back in the 70s, but okay. I still have the same formula under our old Rip Van Winkle, Pappy Van Winkle label.
So it's essentially, it's a very similar product.
Yes, same formula, just, we try to make it as closely to what my grandfather did years ago.
Now, I understand it can be fairly hard to get.
Oh, yes.
It is. Unfortunately, we're stuck with, our bourbon's anywhere from 10 to 23 years old, so we only have so much to sell, because our whiskey was made in the late 80s and early 90s, so we're stuck with what we produced back then. And we didn't see this big boom in the bourbon business, so caught a little bit short-handed. But we're making more product, but it'll be for quite a while before it comes
okay,
to market.
Okay, so the good news is down the road there'll be an adequate supply.
Right,
the bad news is it might be tough to get, but when you get it, you really should enjoy it.
Exactly. It's worth the wait.
Now, what's the secret? Is it in distribution? I mean, how can people find out if they can buy it in their area?
Well, we distribute our product around the country in major markets. We only have about 6,000 or 7,000 cases available, but
okay.
In the fall and in the spring, April and May every year. So that's the best time to find it. In the fall is when most of it comes out, a little bit in the spring.
Now, is there anything on a website where people can find out
yes,
where they might? Okay, go ahead.
OldRipVanWinkle.com and click on where to find in your area, and hopefully there'll be some stores that carry it.
Now, it's really curious. Wasn't Rip Van Winkle in the Hudson Valley in New York State?
He was.
How did he get to Kentucky?
Well, my father actually started the label, but the only thing we took with us from when we sold the distillery, Stitzel Weller was the name of our original distillery that my grandfather started, took with us some bourbon that he had made, and also the trade name Old Rip Van Winkle. So obviously, being a Van Winkle, we like that name. So we just like the character, and so that's what we named our whiskey.
Well, it's a wonderful all American story.
Can
Thank you so much.
Ask
of course, question. You can.
Why do you have mermaids on your bow tie?
I have no idea. I just liked it. I wish I had some whiskey barrels on there. It'd be a lot better.
Yeah, I like the mermaids.
Yeah, we wish you had a whiskey barrel with you right now.
Well, this is a Vineyard Vines tie, so I'll go ahead and talk to those guys, those two guys that own that company, see about getting a bourbon barrel on there. I'm sure they'd be happy to do it. We'd probably trade some whiskey for some bow ties, don't you think?
I'll tell you, thank you for introducing me to a drink I never, ever appreciated.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it. We've converted a lot of Scotch drinkers to bourbon whiskey, believe me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So there you have it. We'll see you again, same time, same place, next week.
Bye-bye.